This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. How do we live a life that pleases God? Well, we must live a life displaying a living and complete faith. So how do we perfect our faith? Today, Pastor Sam Horn will conclude a sermon titled, Tried and True, from James chapter 1. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
You know what's interesting? In Genesis chapter 6, verse 9, Noah is described this way. Noah was a righteous man, perfect in his generations. And it's the same idea that James is talking about when he says, let steadfastness have its perfecting work so that you may be perfect, complete. Here's an example in the Old Testament of somebody who was that. He was perfect. He was complete. His faith lacked nothing. And the evidence of all of that was the fact that for 120 years, he built a boat when there was no ocean to be seen. This was clearly not something that you were going to sail on in the river Tigris or the river Euphrates, much less the Jordan. I mean, this was a massive boat. And so all along, people are coming up to Noah and they want to know, what in the world are you doing? I mean, think about the immense amount of resources that Noah invested in building this boat. I'm sure that throughout Noah's life, that boat became known by many things. Maybe it was called Noah's Folly. I'm sure Noah and his family had to answer more than once, why in the world are you building that boat? It's clearly not a fishing boat. It's clearly too big for you guys to just be taking a little pleasure cruise up the Euphrates because you can't even get the boat there. This is the wrong place to build a boat. This is the wrong size of a boat to build. And I have no idea why in the world you're doing this. And all Noah could say is this. God said there's a flood coming and God said to build this boat. And they're like, what's a flood? That's a word we're not familiar with. Flood is like lots of water that rises and comes like from the sky and it comes up from the ground and it's just going to flood everything. And they're going, we've never seen a flood. This is crazy. And Noah said, I'm building this boat because I fear God and he told me to build it. That's what it meant for 120 years. Let me give you another example. Abraham. In Hebrews 11, 17 through 19, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received promises was in the act of offering up his only son. In verse 19, he considered, there's our word that James is talking about. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead. I mean, here is Abraham who manifests unwavering belief and full-hearted trust in God's promise during an intense time that demanded everything from him. And if you want the final example, it's Jesus who manifests unwavering belief in God's character during a physically painful and emotionally devastating life-ending trial. James says, you want some models for what this looks like? It looks like Noah, who fully trusted God's words. It looks like Abraham, who fully trusted God's promise, and it looks like Jesus, who fully trusted God's plan. Let me ask you a question. Do you fully trust God's words? That's where James is going with this. Do you fully trust God's words? No matter how hard it gets, no matter how long the trial is, no matter how hard it crushes you down, do you trust God's words? Do you trust God's promises? And do you trust God's plan? There's a fourth thing that James talks about here in this text. He says, look, God is going to use trials to build into you, to reveal the condition of your faith. He's going to build resilience into your faith. He's going to craft resolute conviction into your faith about God's words and God's promises and God's plans for your life. And he's going to use trials to do that. But here's what you're going to need. If you're going to navigate the trial the way Noah did, or if you're going to navigate the trial the way that Abraham did, or if you're going to do what Jesus did when Peter describes him as keeping and trusting himself, continuing to trust him, entrust himself to the one who judges justly, if you're going to do that, you're going to need a wisdom. And that's the fourth thing that he talks about. He talks about a spiritual requirement, wisdom from above. And look at verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, and then he immediately tells you where to go to get that wisdom. Because there were a ton of other wisdoms available. In every one of those cities, they could go to just about any temple. They could go to just about any school of thought. They could go to any philosopher in the city, and they could get wisdom that would give them answers about how to navigate all of this pressure. And James says, if you are going to navigate life under pressure in a way that develops in you a faith that is wholehearted, single-focused, and fully trusting, you're going to have to go to the right source for wisdom. And the wisdom you're looking for is not coming from beneath. It is coming from above. It is the wisdom that came down from God that the psalmist in Psalm 1 verse 2 described as the law of the Lord. And James is going to remind you that this wisdom is not innate in you. You were not born with this wisdom. It is a wisdom that has to be implanted in you. It has to be received by you. That's why in chapter 1, verse 21, he says, receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to deliver you. James says, if you want to navigate trial in such a way that it produces what God intends to produce about your faith, you're going to need a wisdom that comes from God that you receive when it's implanted in your heart. You're going to need that kind of wisdom. And it actually produces certain qualities. Wisdom isn't just intellectual. It's not primarily just the right information. Remember, we said that James is not worried that his people have believed the wrong things. He's worried about the condition of their belief. He's not worried so much about whether they have the Word of God and whether that information is available to them. It is. He's worried about what that information is producing in them and why it isn't producing the things it should. It should be producing, for example, purity and peaceableness and reasonableness and graciousness and gentleness and mercy and moral goodness and impartiality and sincerity, single-heartedness. That is the mark of wisdom from above that James is going to talk about in chapter 3, verses 17 through 18. But if you go back to what we just said earlier, none of those things were true in the lives of some of these people. And that's why James has said, you're going to have to come to the right place for the right wisdom to navigate your life. And you say, well, that's easy. I'll just come to the scriptures. And James says, no, there is a condition. There is a condition that God has placed on that wisdom working in your life. And that condition is this. You have to come without doubt. You have to come without doubt. And he's going to connect doubt to another idea. He's going to connect doubt to double-mindedness. He says the person who doubts is double-minded. So when we think about the idea of doubt, here's what James wants you to catch. He is thinking about a person who has a divided heart. The word doubt has the idea of a person trying to discern, trying to decide. I'm trying to decide something. I'm struggling with a decision. I'm divided in what I am thinking. That's a doubter. So are you doubting? The idea is, are you struggling to be in or out? This is the idea. James has said, when you come to God as a believer, wanting to have wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith, you cannot come as a doubter. You cannot come as someone whose heart has not fully been set to God. You have to come like Deuteronomy chapter 6 talks about, and like Jesus said, you have to come with a heart that loves the Lord with all of its strength, with all of its might, and with all of its force. When you have that kind of a heart and you're loyal to God, then you come to God and he says to you, I will give you insight and ability to do what I wrote down in the law of the Lord. That's the idea. So let me put it in an illustration that James actually gives you here in the text. Here is the illustration that James gives you at the end of the book. He's going to take you back to Old Testament Israel, and when you meet them, and they're with Elijah on a mountaintop. When you meet them, they have been under extreme pressure for 3.5 years. There's been no rain. Think about the impact of that drought in their life. There's been no crops. The economy is in tatters. There have been physical afflictions that have come because of this. Families have actually had deaths because of this, and there is no rain. And here's the point that we sometimes miss. God had told them exactly how to get rain. In Deuteronomy chapter 11 and in Leviticus chapter 26, God says, when you do my commandments, I will bring rain. And in Zechariah 10 verse 1, he said, ask me and I will send you rain. So here is a nation that knew exactly who would send them rain and what they had to do to get it and how they would bring their request to the one who would send them rain. And for 3.5 years, there had been no rain. And some of them were wondering, hey, our God, Jehovah, we're talking to him. He's not bringing us rain. He didn't bring us rain in year one. He didn't bring us rain in year two. He didn't bring us rain in three. And now it's halfway through year four, and we are dying. And over here are 400 priests and 450 prophets of a new god called Baal, who happens to be the rain god. And all of the nations around us seem to be getting rain, and they worship him. Maybe if our God isn't going to give us rain, maybe we should come and we should listen and we should worship and we should serve this God. We can still keep our national identity and be followers of Jehovah, but in the area of rain, maybe we need to add this God in. And you just saw in an Old Testament example what a double-minded, doubled heart people looks like. God isn't giving me what I want. He isn't giving me what I need. And he isn't doing it in my time frame. And I have a choice. I can either keep doing what God told me to do that doesn't seem to be working, or I can go over here and do something new that seems to work for others. And James says later on in the book, do not be deceived. Do not be deceived. And that brings us really to the fifth thing, and that is this. There is a test. There is an evaluation that he's going to say, look, you all are in cities and you are suffering. You've given everything up. You were driven out of Jerusalem. You lost your homes. You lost your jobs. You lost your savings account if you even had one. You're in a new city and the same thing is happening to you, and you are under the extreme pressure of need. And so he's going to introduce a test, and it is how you consider wealth and poverty. James says, look, in verse 2, count it all joy. Consider. You know something. All right, let's take that knowledge and put it to work now in a real test that has come into your life. If you are poor and you have nothing, are you content? Are you rejoicing in the fact that you believe something that God has told you as true? Are you actually rejoicing in the exalted condition that you're in? Do you really believe what Paul is going to later tell you, that you are seated in the heavenlies with Christ and that you right now have every spiritual blessing? Is that your boast? The word boast there has the idea of taking joy in. This is what I rejoice in. This is where my happiness, this is where my joy is. As somebody with no resources, have you rightly gone to God's word and have you evaluated it correctly? Or are you running after your own way of getting wealth? Are you doing what the guy in chapter 4 did? Are you running to this city and that city and doing whatever you can because you think you can gain wealth when God told you how he would give it to you? When Jesus himself said, take no thought about these matters. When Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, he knows that you have need of food and he knows that you have need of raiment and he knows that you have need of shelter. Are you willing to trust that? Are you willing to rejoice in the exalted state that you have as a follower of Christ? And those of you in the providence of God that have money, are you rejoicing and boasting in your money, or are you rejoicing and boasting in the fact that God humbled you so that you could see the truth about Jesus and you could enter in like the poor man does without any of your own resources? And the evidence of your humility is the joy you take in taking all of the wealth that God has given you, and instead of using it to build your kingdom that is going to just burn up even while you're building it, like you can see in verse 11, the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass, its flower falls, its beauty perishes. So also will a rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits. Rich man, are you rejoicing in the fact that God has humbled you so that you will see your spiritual poverty and embrace the richness of the gospel? And the evidence of that is what you do with your wealth after you realize your humility. And now, instead of trying to use your wealth to build your kingdom and to secure things that God has already promised you, you're using all of that wealth to advance his kingdom and to strengthen his church and to proclaim the word. This is an amazing test, because it really does speak to the very heart. Let me give you an illustration of what I'm talking about. You know, over the years of church history, there have always been examples of this. Imagine a young man called to ministry. He's sensing God's, he's humbled himself, he's been a believer, he's called to ministry, and he's laboring away at preparation. He's got a young family, and he has all this pressure. God is meeting his needs, just like Matthew 6 says. God said, you know what? I'm going to give you food. I'm going to give you raiment. And I'm going to give you shelter. And God has been meeting those things. But every month, it's a struggle. It's excruciating. And one day, he gets a job offer for more money than he's ever made in his life. James says, you just entered the test. And he sits down and he starts thinking, you know, if I get this job, it's going to delay, it's going to maybe make a change in my plans, but, you know, it could be that I'm going to amass a small fortune. It's going to help me. I'm going to get a better house. I'm going to buy a better car. I'm going to be able to provide for my family. And it's going to give me a lot more money to give away. And I won't have to live the way I'm living. I'll be able to provide. I'll be able to do. I'll be able to move. And maybe there's this idea that down the road, if I just get enough money, then I can go back into ministry and I won't have to worry about having to depend on others for things that I need. I won't have to depend on a church to give me a salary. I won't have to depend on churches to send me to the mission field. I will have amassed enough money to meet all of the needs that I have. And so maybe that's what God is wanting me to do. And James says, you just passed through a test and it's revealing something about you. Are you going to believe God who said, I will provide for you all of those things? I'm going to give you shelter. I'm going to give you food. I'm going to give you raiment. Or are you desirous of figuring out how you can amass enough of this world's goods so you don't ever have to worry about them and you don't have to depend on that? You see the problem? You just found a man who has a double heart. Hey, I want to go do this for God, but I want to do it in a way that I don't have to depend the way I'm having to depend right now. Or perhaps there's a wealthy man and all of a sudden God starts working in his heart and he says, you know what, God, I'm going to surrender to you and I'm going to follow you, and all of this wealth that I've been using to depend on, I'm going to start using for you, and I'm going to depend on you to do for me what I need to do. I'm going to depend just like the poor man depends. That's exactly what happened to a young physician many decades ago named D. Martin Lloyd-Jones. And he became an incredible minister of the gospel. And that brings us to the final thing that James says. James says, when you go through a test like this and you actually pass the test, there is a satisfying reward. There is true and lasting blessing. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive something. He will receive something that is not available in this world. The wisdom of this world will never be able to give you this. And trust me, for all eternity, this is the thing you want. This is the thing you most desire. If you understand what James is talking about, the things that the world has to offer you that are going to so quickly fade away, if you live for those things, there's going to come a day when you wish you had lived for something different. There is a crown that God gives to certain people, and the crown is this: it's everlasting life. And only people who have this mark get it. Nobody else gets this crown. The only people who get this crown are people who love God. You can see it, can't you, at the end of verse 12? Which God has promised to those who love him. You can see that again in chapter 2, verse 5. Listen, my beloved brothers, has not God chosen those who are poor in the world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he has promised to those who love him? So the question for you this morning is this, and it's not just for you, it's for me, it's for all of us. Do you love Christ? Do you love Christ? You say, yeah, absolutely. I've loved Christ my whole life. Of course I love Christ. Do you love Christ, or do you love what Christ gives you? There's a big difference. Put differently, what will happen to your faith when Jesus doesn't meet your expectations? When all of a sudden the things that you expect Jesus to do for you aren't there. And all of a sudden you find yourself out on an ocean and you are being tested and you are looking to Jesus, just like the Old Testament Israelites were looking to God, and what you are looking for doesn't show up. And it doesn't show up in year one, and it doesn't show up in year two, and it doesn't show up in year three, and you're halfway through year four, and you're starting to wonder, maybe I'm following the wrong wisdom. James says, if you will let wisdom have its perfecting work in you, there will come a day where you will get everything that you want. It's called the crown of life. And so James is going to ask you again, do you love God? Do you love him?
Thank you, Pastor Sam. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for Sunday morning worship at 9 a.m. or 10:45 a.m. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about PBC, please email radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time, so together we can grow in grace.